Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Freedom Nation podcast with Jeff Kickle. And on today's show, I've got Neil Solomon. Neil is a true freedom story. He is going to share with you how he went from the corporate world to becoming an entrepreneur. He also went from being an entrepreneur to a global nomad. He's been to 70 countries around the world. He lives abroad, and he's going to share with us his story on how he did it, how he created an income stream that allowed him to do that, how he even sold that business, and he'll give us an update on a book that he's got coming out that talks about the systems he used to do it. So stay tuned. I'll be right back on in just one second.
Welcome to the Freedom Nation Podcast with Jeff Kickle. On this show, Jeff shares his expertise in financial and retirement planning from a different perspective. Planning for your Freedom Day, which is the first day that you wake up and have enough income or assets and do not have to go to work that day. Learn how to calculate what you need, how to generate income sources, and listen to interviews from others who've done it themselves. Get ready to experience your own Freedom Day.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Neil, how are you, my friend?
Very good. Thank you, Jeff.
I am so glad to have you on today. Looking forward to getting into the story a little bit more. We did a little pre-interview and I got to learn a little bit about you, but definitely let's dig in. So right off the bat, tell us what your story is. How did you get to where you're at today?
Well, after graduating college as an engineer, I got a corporate job and I was good. Even though I was an engineer, I was always a sales guy. Okay. I always felt like sales was my thing. So I got into technical sales.
Okay.
And I did that for about 15 years mm-hmm. in this mid-level kind of company. And I never thought about being an entrepreneur or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that there was what I call golden handcuffs
okay.
that I was tied to. And, you know, I have a family, I have a house, I have a mortgage, I have all these things. And it's like, oh no, they've got me locked. and now what do I do? And so there's like this thing. So I said, okay, I'm going to do better at my job. And I had this breakout year just before 2000.
Okay.
And my goal was about $2 million and I did 6.5 million.
Wow.
In sales.
Awesome.
And I expected a huge check. Okay. I was making about 80,000 because it was a solid kind of job and commissions aren't like huge and things like that.
Yeah.
And the check came. It took about 18 months to complete the job. And it was a great story for the whole company that they loved how, you know, this guy hit 325% of his goal, blah, blah, blah. The check came and it was about $12,000.
Oh, Jesus.
and I went to my boss. It's all in the book, but I won't go through the whole thing. Anyway, that was the day that everything changed.
Yeah.
When I realized that, you know, I'm going to die here very unhappy.
People suck. I'm never going to, yeah, I won't be financially free because you're going to, it's going to be, I owe my soul to the company store.
Yes. Yes. And well, so what's even worse, Jeff, you're going to love this part, is the way they did next year's goal was based upon last year's actual.
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah. I worked for a very large financial firm that I think in 17 years that I was with the company, there was, I think, 19 different comp plans during mm-hmm. that time period. And always we always seemed to make exactly the same amount of money every year, but my goals were always higher every year.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's this treadmill that you're on
yep.
that you don't own. Somebody nope. else owns it. You've got to run on it.
You're making someone else wealthy, not yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. You're in these handcuffs. So That's when the thing, I call it, died inside me.
Yeah.
Okay. This idea of what my parents told me I should do,
mm-hmm.
get a good job, have a family, all that stuff. And what I realized is that I need to really work on me.
Yeah.
And become a different me. And so that story of getting a $12,000 check didn't mean I quit the next day and, you know, started a business and became a millionaire. That's not what happens.
Nope.
What happens was that was the sign to start working. That was the sign to start becoming a different person, a person who was willing to take the risk, a person who would save more than they spend so that he could protect himself for the rough times and get into a business and start making networks and start learning about different things. So I did that quietly, and it took me about 3 years of work. And when I was done, I was ready. Okay. Even when I was ready, I still wasn't ready. So there is no ready.
No.
Okay. If there's somebody who's listening to this,
there's a sort of ready and a.
Yeah. So all you can do is be prepared.
Yep.
You're always going to feel like an imposter, whatever new room you step into. If you step into a college person, to a job, to an entrepreneur, each time you make a step, you're going to feel like an imposter.
Okay.
That goes away the more you do. And so you start to become, I became an entrepreneur, got into the franchise restaurant business, started growing, had some failures, grew again. Grew to where I had almost 300 employees.
Okay.
And did that for about 20 years.
Okay. Wow.
Along the path, I decided that I had enough freedom. So being an engineer, I was really good at creating systems.
Yeah.
I kept thinking about how does Jeff Bezos go from being this financial guy in Miami to being the largest business in the world, potentially, you know, in the retail business. Okay. That's the thing that I would think about. How did he become that guy? And so it's like, okay, now Jeff Bezos doesn't wrap every book and send it out. You got to come up with the system so that people can do the work while you're not there with them.
Yeah.
And that's what I worked on. And I have a whole bunch of things in the book that I talk about on how to do that. How to measure things, how to trust people, how to instruct people, all those different things, how to make deals, how to sell, how to look at evaluating all these different things. Anyway, I stepped out of that world in 2024.
Okay.
But between 2018 and COVID, I was a nomad. And, and it would get longer and longer because first, it was to test the system.
Okay.
Right? If you're there, you know, I call it the shower test, right? Think about it this way. If you own a business, a small business, and you fell in the shower and hit your head and you're unconscious in your bed.
Yeah.
Now, if you're unconscious for an hour, probably your business will be fine. Right? That's the minimum. How would it be if you're unconscious for a day or a week? Or a month. Okay. So I started to think about all of those things and how long I could be away, not just physically, but also completely away from the company. And each one is a test. And what you find out in every test that you do is where the hole is. And that's what you fix first. And then you find out who stepped up, who didn't. You know, those are the kind of things that you learn as you go through those tests. And eventually, I was able to, for example, make an acquisition that was $3 million, buying these businesses, employ 100 new people to our company.
Wow.
And during the entire process, the only thing I was allowed to show up for was the closing and the welcome to the new employees.
Okay.
Everything else had to go without me. So if you think about the task, what you have to do, it's not even just what you have to do, it's who you have to become to do that task, to actually say, I am going to risk my entire life savings on this system that I created. So it's a different person you actually have to become.
Yeah.
The person who left or the person who got the $12,000 check would have no idea who I am now. And I can barely remember him.
Yeah.
So
that's all.
That's my story.
That's
all. And now I wrote a book.
Now you wrote a book about it. Okay. Well, yeah. So let's go back and unpack some of this. So first thing, you went off, you started some franchises, things like that. Where was that point in there that you started to kind of do some of these experiments? Was it right away? Was it, you know, 5 years in, 10 years in that you started to do some of these let me unplug type experiments?
Okay. So the unplug type of experiments didn't happen until about 6 or 8 months after I had my first business running.
Okay. That's actually pretty early. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was because I found out that my real passion in life was travel.
Yeah.
And I never knew that until I was like 42.
Okay.
I didn't know that the world had so many interesting things. Mm-hmm. I'm a curious person by nature.
Yeah.
Okay. I read a lot. I like to learn a lot. But when I could do it in person and different than a book or a TV or something, it was like night and day. Until mm-hmm. I think the only time I left the United States prior to like 40 years old was uh-huh. was a resort trip, which you don't even know the country. If you've been to a resort, you don't know anything.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't even consider being in a country if you've only been in the resort.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah. I'm with you. Yeah,
so
my parents are funny because they're like, oh, we've been all over the world. Yeah, on cruises. So you're in this little bottled little world, you know, overnight. Yeah, you haven't had to try and figure out, you know, my wife and I, a couple years back, we flew from Austin into London for a uh-huh. trip. We were doing the Christmas markets, and nice. On the way in on the train from the airport from Heathrow, we found out that our flight was canceled the next day into Munich because it had been snowed in. And I'm like, until you have where you have to figure out how the hell am I going to get myself to the continent? That was my only goal. How do I get onto the continent? And then we can figure it out from there.
Exactly.
At that point. You know, that's travel. That's experience. And then having to go out and maybe go to a local pharmacy and figure out how to get toothpaste or something. That's actual real life.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think most people are tourists.
Yeah.
And they're not travelers.
Yep.
So when I consider a traveler, take for example in the United States,
mm-hmm.
if you went to, I don't know, New York City, you'd have no problem being a traveler,
mm-hmm.
because it's so common to what you understand already.
Yep.
It may be a bigger place, it may be a louder place or whatever, but you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Going to a place you don't understand is the most interesting thing in mm-hmm. the world, because you don't know what you don't even know.
Yep.
The problem is most people are afraid mm-hmm. that they are going to, that something's going to hurt them or something is going to scare them or they, you know, things like that. I got to tell you, from being in 70 countries, never happens. Never happens. I lived in what probably people would think of are the most dangerous countries in the world.
Hmm.
And I've never felt danger in my life.
Nope. I mean, London's a great example. I can walk around London and never feel uncomfortable. I walk around downtown Austin and I've got my head on a swivel most times.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I get it. I absolutely get it.
Yeah.
And so I talk about some of that stuff in the book.
Okay.
A lot of things that happen in this life that we have of going from I guess when we were kids, we were free, right?
Yep.
Other than our parents would say, you can do this, you can't do that. But I remember leaving. I mean, the kids don't do this now, but we would leave the house
mm-hmm.
and then come back when it's dark.
When it got dark. That was our instruction.
Yes.
Be back before it's dark. Okay.
Yes, exactly. That is the freedom that I think everybody who probably is listening right now thinks of as freedom.
Yeah.
Okay. But I want you to think about those times, right? When you were doing those things, you were with your friends or whatever, your homework is done, or maybe you didn't do it, whatever, and you snuck out, but you had no commitments. Okay, here's the important thing about freedom that people don't understand. Freedom is given permission by your constitution, but how it really is useful is by what you're uncommitted to. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, if your time is committed, if you have to do this and do that and then take this kid there and then get to the store on time to close and count the register and blah, 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 you're not free. Mm-hmm. And you're not, you might have enough money. You might have more money than you need for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But you're not free because you have more commitments than you have time.
Yeah.
And when you were that kid running around the neighborhood, you had no commitments and nope. You were truly free. And I think that's what people want to get back to, is that kind of freedom. So the reality is, the more you have, the more this society that created, we need to own everything and have everything and take care of everything. All of a sudden, I mean, it's not just the job that's the golden handcuffs. It's the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Locks you in.
You know, and so I think, I want to even go farther back here. You know, when you were talking about, okay, I was working for this company and I got the bonus and it was crappy. You know, what were the things that you had to do to kind of work on yourself? Like you said, what were the things you had to do to get yourself from, I'm an employee, to now I want to become an entrepreneur, and that transition?
Okay. I didn't know anything. Okay. My father was a small entrepreneur. I have uncles who've done well. And so I talk to them. Mm. You start by talking to people who are doing that stuff.
Yeah.
And usually they don't have very good advice for you because they're not in the same position you're in right now. Mm. Right. They only know what they knew that during their time that worked. Mm. And so I started to read what my contemporaries were doing.
Okay.
I would read. Typically, one book a week.
Okay.
50 books a year, mm-hmm. for 2 or 3 years straight through learning. And I would learn things that had nothing to do with business, had to do with psychology, it had to do with anything that I thought could get me over the hump, mm-hmm. of fear. So there's an idea of, I have this opinion about, there's two things. Fear and stress are two different things. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fear is what you don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Stress is working through what you do know. Mm-hmm. You know, there's pressure on you to complete something. You do know it. Okay. Fear is, going back historically, there's a tiger in the reeds. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know where he is, but we hear something. We hear some twigs snapping. That's fear. Going to the country you've never seen or heard of or whatever, what people tell you is fear. It's not stress. Mm-hmm. So the fear is the problem, the fear of the unknown, the fear of being stupid, the fear of losing money, the fear of, and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. The more you learn, it seems, for me anyway, the easier it got to overcome the fear.
Yeah.
What really changed was I never wanted to start my own business that I had to create. Now, okay. I did some of that in a small way, and they always seemed to fail, like these gig kind of things. But at least I knew some things about trying to start things. So I said, let me buy into an existing business that's already profitable.
Yep.
And in the United States, that's quite easy to do. And so the government gives you the funding. You can, I talk about it in the book, you can come up with 10% of the cost of the business, and that's it. And you can jump to something else.
Yeah.
And that's your start. I am a big believer in taking something that runs and maybe being more efficient or something like that.
Yeah.
Rather than recreating the wheel, because so many businesses fail. Mm-hmm. And that's why I had chose franchising, or I had chose existing businesses. It was easier to fund. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, employees are already there. Yeah. There's a system in place. You know, those kind of things make the transition a lot easier. And for your audience today, so many people are retiring. Mm-hmm. and their kids don't want the business.
Yep.
So they have no other thing to do other than sell. Now, the financial industry is seeing that's a big part of it. And they're trying to, like, the private equity people are trying to roll up these companies and you know, take this business here, this business here, this business here, turn them into one bigger business. But any one of us can do that, too. The government really helps us.
Well, and I mean, the beauty of it is there's a lot of businesses in the sub-million-dollar range, or, you know, 2 million and under range. There's a ton of them. And business brokers don't want to have anything to do with them. There really isn't anybody that helps those people. So they're just kind of floating around out there looking for someone to help, or someone that can write a check and take over that business. And, you know, a lot of these are great businesses. Other ones are, you know, unfortunately, the baby boom generation that, you know what, they were taught to work hard and they continue to work hard and they don't automate. They don't, you know, they basically own a job in a lot of cases. So it's a really great opportunity to come in, automate, improve the business, build systems, you know, and take advantage of that. So
I 100% agree. And if anybody's listening, it's in the book how I did it, give you the full explanation. But the simple explanation is there's a website called Biz by Sell. I don't know if you've ever talked about that here. Go on Biz by Sell. It's run by, I believe, the Wall Street Journal. All the businesses all over the country are on there. Two things. One, pick a business that sells for somewhere between 500,000 and a million. And has cash flow and is not a new business. Okay. Don't look for specifically real estate or any sponsored ads, and then sort them by the highest cash flow. Okay. That is probably your best option in that area, that particular one that hits the top. You don't have to buy the top. It could be a beauty salon. You don't know beauty salons. It could be a software company. You don't know software companies. But there will be, and when I did it for the book, there was 118 available in my neighborhood that are there for you to look at. And the next step is to make the phone call. Call the broker and just find out what it is. Now, you're going to be afraid to make the call. But think of it like, I give this example, okay? Pretend that I am your senior partner. You can use my name. And you're my junior partner who's calling about these deals because you are presenting them to your senior partner, me, to talk to see which ones I want to buy. You're completely off the hook. You don't have to think that the guy is on the other end of the phone is going to think you're an idiot. None of that stuff. You're just the analyst. And guess what? You're going to learn more from those phone calls than you'll learn from any course, anything you've ever done in your life. Remember that the guy who's on the other end of the line wants you to buy, period. He's not going to judge you. If you don't know something, it's okay to ask. You say, ah, my partner said this, but I'm not sure. What do you think? It's a beautiful script and you can feel at home doing it and you will learn so much. And then what happens once you've done enough of these, and this is part of the things I talk about, is you never have to make a decision. Because when you've done 100 of these phone calls and you've seen 100 of these deals, the one that's going to show up in front of you isn't going to be, should I buy this? Should I not buy this? It's going to be a recognition of a pattern that you've seen. And you'd be like, this is it. And that's how it happens. That's how it happened to me. It becomes pattern recognition. It's not that you have to say, should I? Am I going to regret it? Am I blah, 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 and torture yourself? No. You all of a sudden know a good deal from one that isn't.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. So tell us about the book. What's in it? What's yeah, when's it coming out? All that kind of good stuff.
Sure. So the book it's one book. It's actually quite large, but it's in really three sections.
Okay.
So it opens with my $12,000, $13,000 check. I don't even remember. Mm. And my sadness with sitting across from my boss and feeling this loss. Okay. That's how the book starts.
Okay.
And then there's a trajectory of like a third of the book, which talks about the preparation.
Okay.
To go from that moment to the preparation for my first deal.
Okay.
Then the second part of the book is the deals, how I structured them, how I did them, how I bought in partners or banks or which, how the financials worked. And then the third part is now you've got your freedom, you've got what you've done, you've built everything you plan to build, now what?
Hmm.
So that's the third part of the book.
I love it. What's it called?
It's called The 1% Door.
Okay. Interesting.
And what it means is it's not a door that's reserved for the 1%, political, financial. It's a door that's always open, that there's no bouncer for, but only 1% of the people actually want to walk through it.
Yeah.
It's the life that you want is on the other side.
You just have to go get it.
You have to go get it.
Yeah.
And what I tell people is this thing my father used to tell me. He used to say there's no competition out there. Which is a fallacy, right? There's competition everywhere.
Sure.
But he would say there's no competition. And what I can tell you is, if you're in my world, there's no competition. There's nobody doing what I do, and probably similar like you, Jeff.
Yeah.
There's nobody doing what you do. You're not competing against the other guy.
Yeah.
And even if you find the deal that's perfect for you and there's competition, walk away.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is tomorrow.
There'll be plenty of them. Yeah.
There's so many deals that are available. It's outrageous. There's mm-hmm. no need to compete on any of them.
Yeah. That's
so awesome. This is the idea. Okay. We've been structured to do so many things in life, to get a good job, to stay until you retire, to blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And most of it has been wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and like I said, I mean, we talked about this beforehand that, you know, the traditional route of get a good job, go to work for a company, save everything you can, you know, to the point where, okay, you finally can retire and throw on black socks and sandals and take one cruise per year. You know, I mean, that's the American dream, but I see that as the American nightmare.
Yeah.
I didn't want that. I never wanted it, you know, and although I've spent my entire career over 30 years, you know, helping people invest money and doing that, it wasn't that made me who I am today and, you know, didn't give me financial freedom. It was going out on my own, creating income streams. And just like we talked about before, you know, and it's not a lump that sits here. It's actually an income stream. You know, that we're used to. We're used to a paycheck, you know,
yes.
and maybe even a little playcheck on the side, you know, the paychecks and playchecks.
I'll give you one example of how, so I live around the world now.
Yeah.
Okay. In the United States, you gotta take out loans for everything to buy everything.
Sure.
The rest of the world, it's pretty much cash,
okay.
Except in some parts of Europe where you can get good loans.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you about my, I have a property in Medellin, Colombia.
Okay.
Okay. And everybody thinks when I say that I'm dodging Pablo Escobar and his machine guns and bombs and
dead.
Stuff like that. Right. Yeah. Not happening. If you don't know Medellin, I can tell you this from experience. You probably have never seen something so beautiful in your life.
Yes. Totally.
Anyway, where I live is this big tower, and it's an Airbnb, two-bedroom. And my wife and I visit there 3 months a year.
Okay.
Okay. So here's how the property works. Bought the property pretty much around $400,000.
Okay.
Okay. If I never use it, it earns about 10%.
All right.
Which is good.
Mm-hmm.
$40,000 comes to me every year.
Okay.
What I do is I don't take the $40,000. I leave it in Colombia.
Got it.
Okay. The money goes in a Colombian account, mm-hmm. which is actually a German account from an insurance company called Alianza,
yep.
which gets around between 8 and 12% a year nice. On average. And that's just stable fixed income. Mm-hmm. It's no aggressive formula.
Nope.
Okay. When I live in Medellin, the house is paid for. So everything else is cheaper. The food is cheaper. The events are cheaper. And the services are unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Okay. I can have a massage come to me every day. Mm-hmm. Every day for $40. Okay. Every day they can come to my apartment, set up on the balcony. My balcony is 40 feet wide by 10 feet deep, overlooking everything, right? Mm. I love it. I actually sleep out there sometimes. I love it so much out there. The weather is so perfect. Whatever I want. I want my nails done. I want my feet done. I want my hair cut. I want whatever I want. I go to the doctor, get my teeth done. It's all one-tenth to one, you know, one-fifth of what it would cost elsewhere. So we spend about, I don't know, $2,000 or $3,000 a year, $2,000 or $3,000 a month.
Okay.
So the $40,000 actually becomes $30,000 because we spend 3 months there. Mm-hmm. But my 3 months only spend about $6,000 to $9,000 of that $30,000.
Yeah.
So the money just keeps compounding and sitting there.
Sure.
When I, if I need it, I take it. Mm. But think of it this way: I have 3 months of my life paid for from that one
investment. Yeah.
Do that four
and
times.
And you're still compounding, yeah.
And I'm still compounding. So do that three or four times, or I could just live there or whatever. And you this idea of creating this pile of money so that it gets smaller as you get older.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think of my father who died at 94. If he imagined that his pile was getting smaller as he got older, he would never eat.
Yeah.
He wouldn't eat. He wouldn't go to the doctor. Yep. Nothing. Because he was afraid the pile would get smaller. Mm-hmm. That's the problem with the thinking of this large 401k pile idea.
Yeah. Yep.
What we need is cash to flow to us every day and that it doesn't change.
Well, and even that, okay, let's say you are from the generation of, hey, I built a big, you know, pile of money. Well, you've got to figure out ways to turn that pile into income streams.
Exactly.
So that you don't outlive them. And some of that needs to be lifetime income because you know, I always tell people when I'm doing a financial plan for them, if you can tell me the day you're going to die, I got this. I can run the numbers and we'll be fine. Problem is you just keep wanting to live longer and that just makes my day harder at that point. So it makes it very difficult for me as a financial planner to actually give you an idea. But I can take some of that out by saying, well, let's take your essential expenses and make sure you're never going to outlive them at that point. And then we can worry about the other pieces of it. Yeah, we'll do your paychecks and then your playchecks and make sure you've got enough money for the playcheck side too. So yeah.
Absolutely.
It can be done with anything, but I agree with you. And I think that's a brilliant idea, of doing that where it's just like, okay, if I have it in this country, it's an Airbnb, it generates income, it stays in country. And then whenever I need it, I can go down there, hang out, use the money that's in country and, you know, you're good to go from there.
Exactly. And you can always bring it back.
Yeah.
What also you benefit from something like that is that when you do that in most countries, you get a residency attached for nothing.
Interesting.
And so why do you want a residency in another country? Mm. Well, why not?
Yeah.
You're not getting your passport. You're not giving up your U.S. citizenship. You're still going to pay taxes on everything in the United States.
Just a resident. Yeah.
You're just a resident. It means you can stay as long as you want. Mm-hmm. It means you can use all their services.
Yeah.
It means you are one of them.
Yeah. And you can come and go as you please. So you can leave and go someplace else and then come back during the year. Because otherwise it gets a little hinky. If you're going in there just on visas and things like that, it gets a little hinky of going out and back and out and back.
Yeah. Most countries are around 30 days. Some are 90. Mexico is 6 months.
Yeah.
But once you get to a point where You've got your thing laid out where you want to live.
Yeah.
There's so many things that change. And I talk about this in the book that you don't even realize the things that you're paying for in the United States to live in the United States. And what I'll give you the short version of this, a family that's making $250,000, typically the family of four, let's say two income family, two kids, teenagers, whatever, $250,000. If they were able to be, to get the freedom in their life to be digital nomads or have remote work, probably right now they're saving 10 to 15% of their income.
Yeah.
And the rest is the rest. Okay. Take that same family, same life, same price for the house, same exact life anywhere else in a country you might actually want to live in differently. Mm. Typically, your expenses go down by $100,000. $100,000. So instead of saving, let's call it 30, you're saving 130.
Yeah.
And you're giving up nothing.
Mm.
Nothing.
In fact, you may be gaining some.
Absolutely gaining. Absolutely gaining. There's people don't realize where they're being taxed.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you one tax that you can argue with me about it or not, right? Every other country in the world allows this automobile called BYD. And I don't know if you know what it is in the United States.
No.
Okay. The United States is not allowed to buy any Chinese automobiles.
Okay.
They're not allowed to be sold in the United States. The rest of the world loves them. Mm-hmm. My wife has an electric SUV, big one. It costs like, I don't know, $50,000. The closest electric is $100,000.
Yeah.
BYD and the other competitive companies sell for 50% of all the Germans, of all the Japanese, of all the American cars.
Yeah.
50%, right? So I want you to think about that for a second. The United States says you can't buy them here. Because if you do, it'll destroy this other, this whole job thing with our automobile industry. And it may be the right thing for the United States. But here's what they're actually doing. Every car payment you make by not allowing these companies is a 50% tax.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're paying $1,000 a month for a car and insurance on top and blah, 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 50% of that is going to support other people and not to give you a car. It's a tax.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of those hidden taxes. And it's kind of strange. Once you step out of the U.S., I call it architecture, because what really you have is, think of it this way. You go to a sushi restaurant, right? But you want a steak. Mm-hmm. It's not on the menu.
Yeah.
It's not on the menu to get steak. It's only sushi. Or you want to have ice cream afterwards and they don't have ice cream.
Mm.
It's not on the menu. The same thing. You're inside the U.S.'s restaurant, and it, what's on the menu is all you get a choice of.
Mm-hmm.
They pretend that you have full freedom.
Yeah.
But it's not true. You have a menu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's taxed accordingly.
Final question for you. What have been some of the most favorite places that you've lived around the world?
Oh, lived? Mm-hmm. Lived is a short list, right? Been is different, right?
Yeah.
So some places I've stayed for a long time. I've stayed in Bali for a long time.
Okay.
But I never lived there.
Okay.
I live in Mexico.
Okay.
And I had never seen a narco or a machine gun or any of that stuff or whatever. And I've never felt unsafe here. And I live in Colombia, and I would live in Portugal, but I don't.
Yep.
I would live in Argentina, but I don't. Let me think where else I would. I would probably live in Ecuador.
Okay.
And I think that's about it because what I found out when I went down this path of where to live is everything I thought I wanted wasn't what I wanted.
Okay.
What I realized is it's better to figure out what you don't want. So what I didn't want, I lived in Florida for so many years in Orlando. What I didn't want was air conditioning.
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to open the windows. I didn't want 12 months of air conditioning or heaters. I wanted the windows open. Yeah. I wanted sun, but I didn't want to get burned. And I wanted to be able to walk, and I didn't want to have to drive everywhere. So that's how the evolution of where to live came about for me.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, a lot of the places you mentioned actually are very affordable to live. You can live really well for not so much money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In Mexico, it's about 30%, 40% less.
Yeah.
In Medellin, it's almost 50. Mm-hmm. In Portugal, it's maybe 20% less. Mm-hmm. Spain is also very nice, and that's much cheaper. There's countries that are more expensive. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of there's a website called Numbeo, N-U-M-B-E-O, which compares the place where you live to some other place.
Got it.
And there's another one called Nomad List, which ranks some of the best places to live if you have a remote job.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. I mean, good on you. I mean, I already just ordered the book, so I'm looking forward to coming out here in July. So, we'll make sure we link to that on the show notes page. Plus you gave a ton of great websites and stuff like that. So we'll share those as well. Before we get done, let's do the fast five questions now.
Okay.
All right. First question. You wake up in the morning, business is gone. You have $500, a laptop computer, a place to live, food and clothing. What do you do first?
Okay. I have a place to live. All right. First I figure out how long that $500 is going to last me.
Okay.
Okay. And so the first thing you do is try to have enough so that you can make it through. Even if you, like in Mexico, you're going to eat beans and tortillas, right? It's they call it taco de frijol. So the poor people eat taco de frijol. So you eat taco de frijol for a while, okay? Or ramen or whatever your thing is. That's the first thing. Once I have that figured out, then it's step two. The step two is always the intermediate step.
Okay.
Okay. You don't go for the big goal. You don't go for the hit or miss. You go for the stability to get you in a place where you can start building.
Hmm.
And then you go and really work.
Yeah.
You still have what you had prior to this, this loss. And I've had several huge losses in my life, but you don't stop. You don't stop. That's the whole thing. And if you don't stop, and with the money you make, turn it into streams again, which we talked about, you'll have the money again.
That's awesome. What's the biggest business mistake you've ever made?
Oof. Well, this might take an hour. I don't know. Well, the biggest mistake was probably contractual.
Okay.
It's believing that the contracts have my best interest in mind. So I have this saying that, you know, you believe your contracts are an agreement, right? Until they go bad.
Yeah.
And that happens. That they go bad. So you need to know what's on the bad side of the contract. You have to read it for your worst day. What's the worst day? Because those things are the things that can really, you know, really hit you from behind.
Yeah, absolutely. What's a good book that you'd recommend for our audience?
Oh, a lot. It depends upon where you are. So some of my favorites... I'll give you one that probably no one ever said. The Wisdom of Psychopaths.
Interesting. The Wisdom
and
of
Psychopaths. And that's not for business. But so the business one's 4-Hour Work Week, Choose to Be Rich, anything from Tony Robbins, you know, on and on. But Good to Great, Made to Stick, you know, those kind of classics.
Yeah.
But the thing about the wisdom of psychopaths is that there's three characteristics we all have. One is Machiavellianism, one is narcissism, and one is psychopathy.
Okay.
And just like autism, it's on a scale mm-hmm. of where you are. So they talk about psychopaths in the positive and the negative. And okay. I've never heard of psychopaths in the positive.
Yeah.
But what a psychopath in the positive is someone who's so focused on getting something 100% that they see nothing else.
Okay.
That they have this ability to just drill down and never give up.
Mm-hmm.
Those are called Navy SEALs, surgeons, CEOs. Those are psychopaths, and yeah. not in the negative sense, right?
Yeah.
They're not the one who's a little kid going off doing tricks with cats and stupid stuff.
Yeah.
This is a really interesting concept of all of this range of these so-called bad behaviors, narcissism, Machiavellianism, psychopathy. Really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting book.
I'd put that one on my reading list. So that's very good. Thank you. We'll put that in the show notes. What's a tool you use in your business every day that you might recommend?
Well, I mean, it's always about apps.
Okay.
Right? My favorite tool right now is Claude.
Mm-hmm. Right there with you.
I've had so many problems with the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more, I use Claude as my researcher. As a way to like ideas, because I'm in the idea business now.
Okay.
You know, so I flush out ideas. I think about things, all of my experiences. I tell stories and I ask Claude, what's in this story that's interesting, you know? And so we flush out ideas together. That's really my big one. If it's strictly about business itself, I mean, I really like QuickBooks.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked websites like Upwork and mm-hmm. things where you can hire people for short term. I also like Indeed. If you didn't know this, you can hire a person from any country in the world to do whatever you want on Indeed. If you have an Indeed account,
yeah.
and you are an employer on Indeed, take your current ad, put it in another city around the world, and see the resumes you get back.
Yeah.
You will be shocked.
Yeah.
You'll be shocked that you can get a CEO level person in another country that's been trained in the US and bilingual and blah, blah, blah. And he costs you, for a CEO, $5,000 a month.
Yeah.
And it costs you for an admin who's going to do all your paperwork and all your bookkeeping and all your blah, blah, blah for $1,500 a month.
Yeah.
And work full time for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that once you step out of the US idea and you start doing what bigger companies are doing, which is employing the world, you can be more competitive in your own game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's 4-hour work week to a T, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was the first time I had ever heard of anything like that. And all 100% of my employees are actually overseas for all my companies. Between Claude and my new fun is actually creating AI employees for my businesses, which are, I had a guy on a few months ago that actually that's what he does, is he trains AI to become employees. And honestly, I was just had lunch with a good friend of mine, and he was telling me how he's basically created inside of his business. You know, he's got a chief technology officer, he's got a chief marketing officer and all that. And they all interlink through I think they use Discord. So that they are all able to communicate with each other through Discord. But I mean, he literally in about 6 months developed a platform, because he's a loan officer. He developed a loan officer platform that he's basically now selling to other loan officers.
Nice.
And it was 100% developed on, you know, AI developed on Claude.
So, well, I got to find that. You got to tell me, text me that that link so I can listen to that, because this is very much, I mean, it's always been for me about using the most productive things.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And if I can, if I can, you know, I mean, for editing videos, I mean, this is the funniest thing. I just happened to be on Claude, which is my favorite new friend, you know, and I was testing out the co-work function of Claude. And so I went in there and I'm like, tell me what you can do, you know, in my daily life. What, how can you help me? And so it's now running my task list, my calendar. It actually does go into my email and kind of sorts things. It'll give me a summary of stuff that came in, all that. And I was sitting there and I said, well, you know, on my calendar, it saw that I did a podcast and it was like, well, I can help you edit the video. And I'm like, really? Interesting. I mean, that's when I do it, it's probably 4 hours a week of, you know, editing different videos and all that. I'm like, well, okay, I have this completely screwed up video project that I really have been postponing because I didn't want to get involved in it because it was a friend of mine that asked me to do it. And I never offered to do the actual video editing, but she just kind of assumed it. And I was like, all right, this is the most screwed up video I have. Here's what I need you to do. Here's how it needs to be. It links up with my Descript, which is what I use to do video editing.
Sure.
15 minutes later, it's like, yep, it's done. And I pulled it up and I'm like, holy crap, it was perfectly edited. And what it does is it's able to work with the internal AI inside of Descript to do all the editing and stuff like that. So now it's editing, it'll edit the show. It's
and that's done through Claude.
It's done, through Claude. Yeah, it's done through the
Now, now I'm mad at Claude for not telling me this.
Well, go into go into the when you're in there, you've got the chats and co-work and then code. Go into the co-work thing and just ask it a question. Here's my, you know, look at my weekly schedule. You can link up your Google Calendar, look at my weekly schedule, and then tell me in there what you can help me to do. And it will come up with a whole list of stuff that it'll do for
you.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So, I mean, it, once again, and then finding out I could create employees, which I'd been doing on Go High Level, but now I'm excited because I can do them inside of Claude and have it set up different things and do some coding and stuff like that. So
that's amazing.
Very good. Last question, and I think I know the answer, but what is your definition of freedom?
Ooh, it's what you're uncommitted to.
Okay.
It's so here's the thing, and I'll ask it of your audience. If I was to say to them right now, you've got 15 minutes to pack a backpack. We're going to go on a world tour to the seven wonders of the world, all expenses paid.
Yep.
You have to leave in 15 minutes. Can you do it? That's freedom. Yeah. That kid who was playing in the street could do it.
Yep.
Because he didn't care.
Yep.
He didn't care. But now you have all these commitments. Hmm. How could you do it? We're going to be gone for a month. Everything, whatever you want in the world, but you can't have it.
That's you can't freedom. Get yourself free,
yeah, that is freedom. When you can drop everything and do something in life that you never thought possible, that's freedom.
I love it. Well, Neil, thank you so much. Remind us one more time, what's the name of the book?
It's The 1% Door. You can reach us. The website is The 1% Door, all spelled out. Okay. It's Neil. If you want to email me, Neil at The 1% Door, same thing on all the social media and so on.
Awesome. Well, Neil, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It was very exciting to get to know you today. I know we're going to stay in contact because I truly enjoy, you're living the life I want to live down the road here. So got one more business to sell and then the rest of them I can do anywhere in the world. So,
yeah.
All right, my friend. Well, thank you so much for being on today. Folks, make sure that you subscribe to the channel, and we will put all of Neil's information that he just gave us into the show notes so that you can find all that. And we will see you guys back here the very next time.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Nation Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and all the major channels. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the channel and leave a rating and review. If you have friends and family that could benefit from their own Freedom Day, please share with them. Finally, join Freedom Nation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.